Good morning and welcome to News Briefing. I'm Arjiv, and joining me today with all the headlines is our senior reporter, Arohi.
Good morning, Arjiv. Great to be here.
Absolutely. Before we dive into today's top stories, let's take a quick look at On This Day in History. Today, April 2nd, marks a significant moment in media history. In 1950, exactly 76 years ago, the first regular public television broadcasts began in the United Kingdom. This was a pivotal step in global communication, paving the way for the broadcast news we rely on today. From that historical milestone to today's rapidly evolving world, we bring you the latest. We're covering a wide range of news from BBC News, NDTV News, NPR, The New York Times, CNBC, ESPN, Crisinfo, and many more. Arohi, we have a lot to unpack this morning, starting with the situation in the Middle East. President Trump delivered a primetime address aiming to calm nerves over the Iran war, but reports suggest it left some key questions unanswered. What did the president say, and what were the significant omissions?
That's right. The president's address focused heavily on the status of the conflict, with a central claim that the war in Iran is nearing completion. He sought to reassure the American public and international allies about the progress and trajectory of the U.S.-Israeli involvement. However, as you noted, a closer look at the address reveals some glaring omissions. According to analysis from the BBC, the speech lacked specific details on a clear strategic path forward, the exact conditions for a complete withdrawal, or how the administration plans to manage the region's complex geopolitical dynamics post-conflict. These details were largely absent, leaving a number of critical questions open for observers.
And how have Iranian officials and the international community reacted to the president's statements?
Iranian officials have, predictably, reacted with skepticism and defiance, largely rejecting President Trump's characterization of the war as nearing completion. Their public statements suggest a commitment to continue their own operations and to resist what they view as foreign intervention. Internationally, reactions have been varied, but some European leaders have expressed their concerns. French President Emmanuel Macron, for example, openly criticized the U.S. leader's approach, urging caution and more consistent communication. He reportedly advised, "Be serious. Don't speak every day," an apparent jab at what he perceives as a sometimes contradictory stance from the U.S. Additionally, we're seeing Iran's propaganda efforts intensifying, specifically targeting President Trump with memes, even using Lego imagery, to portray the war's destabilizing impact on the global economy and energy prices.
The economic fallout from this conflict is a significant concern for many. There's been much discussion about President Trump's tariffs and the potential for a grocery shock at home. Can you elaborate on these economic impacts?
Certainly, Arjiv. The economic ripple effects are substantial and multifaceted. It's been a year since President Trump announced double-digit tariffs on imports from around the world, a policy he dubbed Liberation Day, promising an economic boom and a revival of American industry. However, a recent NPR report indicates that those levies have not produced the economic boom the president promised. In fact, many analyses, including one from the New York Times, question the long-term effectiveness of these attempts to revive American manufacturing through tariffs, suggesting that historically, such approaches rarely achieve their intended goals. Compounding this, the ongoing Iran war is creating serious concerns about inflation and consumer prices, particularly food. CNBC reports a grocery shock is on the horizon for approaching U.S. elections. The war's impact on supply chains, global trade, and energy costs directly translates to higher prices for consumers. Representative Vicente Gonzalez of Texas, a Democrat, noted that if food prices continue to climb, it will undoubtedly piss voters off more, signaling a potential political backlash.
And speaking of energy costs, what's the latest on oil prices and the global energy market amid this conflict?
The energy market has been particularly volatile. Oil prices surged by more than 60% in March alone as the U.S.-Iran war raged on. This dramatic increase is already translating to higher gasoline prices in the U.S. and significant concerns about the stability of global energy supplies. Analysts are now suggesting that President Trump's timeline for the war to be nearing completion may not be short enough to avoid what they call oil demand destruction. This refers to a scenario where sustained high prices lead to a significant drop in demand as consumers and businesses cut back, potentially triggering broader economic slowdowns. Iran's war propaganda, as I mentioned, is also heavily emphasizing this destabilizing impact on global energy prices, aiming to amplify domestic anxieties in the U.S.
The Strait of Hormuz is always a critical point in any discussion about Middle Eastern conflicts, given its strategic importance for global oil shipments. What's the current situation there, and how are various countries responding to its potential disruption?
The Strait of Hormuz remains a highly sensitive and vital waterway. It carries roughly one-fifth of the planet's crude oil and liquefied natural gas, making it indispensable for global energy markets. During his address, President Trump made a striking comment, suggesting that the Strait of Hormuz is not America's problem, implying a potential shift in U.S. strategic responsibility or focus regarding the waterway. This stance has, naturally, sparked considerable debate. In response to the ongoing tensions and the critical need to maintain stability in this region, India has announced it will join a significant international effort to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. This initiative involves 35 countries, including major global powers like the UK, France, and Japan, as well as regional players like the UAE. India clarified that Iran is not currently charging tolls from ships crossing the strait, a rumor that had circulated, emphasizing their focus is on ensuring free and safe passage for international maritime traffic.
It's interesting to see so many international actors involved. Has any other country emerged as a key diplomatic player in this conflict?
Yes, Pakistan has stepped up to play a significant intermediary role in the U.S.-Israel war with Iran. This isn't entirely new territory for Pakistan. They've historically played similar high-stakes diplomatic roles during complex moments. Their involvement highlights the ongoing international efforts to de-escalate tensions and find pathways for dialogue amidst the conflict.
Thank you for that comprehensive update on the Iran war and its wide-ranging implications, Arohi. Before we move to other major stories, I understand there was a brief update from the Supreme Court.
That's right, a quick note from the Supreme Court. They are currently hearing arguments on birthright citizenship, a case that could have significant implications for immigration policy and constitutional law in the United States. We'll be keeping a close eye on that as it develops.
From global politics and economics, let's turn our attention to the rapidly evolving world of technology and artificial intelligence. AI continues to dominate headlines, and it seems to be transforming industries at an unprecedented pace. What's the latest on AI's impact, particularly in Silicon Valley?
AI's influence is truly pervasive, and Silicon Valley is experiencing its effects firsthand. The tech industry has long predicted that AI will profoundly impact the nature of white-collar work, and now, the industry's own workers are already getting a taste of that future. The New York Times reports that AI is fundamentally changing how companies operate and how tasks are performed, leading to a significant rethinking of traditional workflows and staffing models. We're also seeing fascinating examples of AI's efficiency. One story details how artificial intelligence helped just one man and his brother build a $1.8 billion company. Who needs a large workforce when AI can handle so many corporate tasks? It's incredibly efficient for these small teams, enabling them to scale rapidly without traditional overhead. However, the report also touches on the flip side, suggesting that while efficient, it can also be a little bit lonely for those working in such lean, AI-driven environments. This raises questions not just about efficiency, but also the human element of work in an increasingly automated world.
That's quite a contrast, efficient but potentially isolating. And with all this talk of AI, it brings to mind the rapid proliferation of technology in everyday life. On a slightly different note, a recent article questioned if every middle schooler really needs a laptop. What's the broader context there?
That question, initially from the New York Times, comes as part of a larger conversation about the integration of technology into education and daily life. While AI enables unprecedented efficiency in business, it also prompts us to consider the appropriate level of technology for younger generations. It ties into broader discussions about digital literacy, screen time, and the balance between tech-driven learning and traditional methods. It's a point of debate that will only grow as technology continues to advance and become more embedded in our society.
A fascinating area to watch. Now, let's shift gears completely and talk about the world of sports. We have updates from international cricket and a look at the business of sports. What's happening on the cricket pitch?
In international cricket, we have some significant news from South Africa. Star batsman Rassie van der Dusen has announced his retirement from international cricket. However, he's not stepping away from the sport entirely. He plans to continue playing domestic and franchise cricket, and has also committed to teaching and mentoring the next generation of South African cricketers, which is great news for the sport there. Also, on the international calendar, Australia is set to tour Zimbabwe for a 3-match one-day international series in September. These Otis will mark a return for Australia to Zimbabwe after an 8-year absence, with all matches scheduled to be played at the Harare Sports Club.
And beyond the field, the business of sports seems to be experiencing some turbulence, particularly concerning sports betting and regional broadcast networks. What's going on there?
Indeed, the business side of sports is a dynamic landscape. Sports betting continues to spike in popularity, and in states like New Hampshire, where it's legalized, wagering helps fund government services. But a new front is opening up, with these states now competing against prediction markets like Kalshi and Polymarket, which are also getting a cut of the action. This creates a complex regulatory and economic environment as different platforms vie for market share in the burgeoning sports gambling industry. On the media side, we're seeing some significant challenges. A group of regional sports networks, or RSNs, is actually set to wind down. This marks the demise of what was once a highly lucrative business model. Despite soaring ratings for many live sports events, RSNs have faced significant financial pressure, driven by factors like rising rights fees, cord cutting, and shifting consumer habits. It's a clear indicator of how rapidly the landscape of sports broadcasting is evolving, forcing traditional players to adapt or face obsolescence.
Arohi, that's a comprehensive wrap-up of today's key stories. From geopolitical tensions and their economic fallout to the transformative power of AI and the changing business of sports, you've covered a lot of ground. Thank you for your insightful reporting.
My pleasure, Arjiv.
And that brings us to the end of our news briefing for today. Before we sign off, here's a unique fun fact to leave you with. Did you know that the world's first computer program designed to generate music was written in 1951 by Christopher Strachey, a pioneer in time-sharing computer systems? It was designed to play two simple melodies, Ba Ba Black Sheep, and God Save the Queen. A truly early harmony between technology and art. That's all for today's news briefing. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow with more. Until then, have a fantastic day.